Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You have tuned into Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm Shifters are people that are popping up all over the planet and making a big difference in the consciousness of our human collective all over the planet. And tonight we're going to meet someone whose work with Bhagavan Amma and the Oneness University is actually spreading light and awakening around the world. Welcome to the show, Michael Klingerman.
Thank you.
How wonderful to talk to you about freedom. Let's talk about freedom.
Okay. We'll talk about some freedom. Where would you like me to start?
Well, we were talking today, and you said that one of the biggest goals in the oneness blessing process is freedom. Is that right?
Liberation.
Liberation. I thought you'd like to talk about that for a few minutes. What exactly does that mean? Liberation from what? I know kind of the answers to some of this, but I'd like us to explore that concept. Can we actually get free? And what is the intention of the Diksha, the oneness blessing? How does it affect us?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So just a little bit of background. Basically, the oneness blessing is coming out of India. It's a phenomena. A phenomena that is very tangible and accessible today through the bestowal of a blessing. And we call this the oneness blessing or Diksha. And Diksha is just a Hindu term for the bestowal of that, which is divine or a blessing.
And it's a very old term, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's basically, it kind of comes from the ancient tradition of where a guru would give a devotee a blessing, and sometimes they would give the blessing through the eyes, which is known as eye diksha, or a gaze, or gazing, or just a blessing on the head through the hands from the palm chakras to the crown chakra. And the wisdom of the guru would then be transferred. In this case, the diksha is a little different because it's coming from an avatar from spiritual consciousness, which in essence is God consciousness. It's not human consciousness. So the wisdom is a bit more vast, and the specific goal of receiving these dikshas on a cumulative effect to the neurology of the brain is liberation from the mind.
Okay, wait a minute. That's really interesting, isn't it? And you can actually see pictures of the brain online that has been affected by dikshas, can't you? Have you seen
that? You know, I've heard that that's true. I haven't personally seen those myself.
I looked it up recently. I Googled it, and it was beautiful. The pictures are very kind of simplistic.
Yeah.
And but they do show that the brain actually changes.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk to you about what kind of changes you've been through and what led you into it. Are you an avatar?
Am I?
Yes.
No.
Oh, darn.
I would definitely not say that I'm not an avatar.
So what led you into the oneness blessings in the first place?
Sure, sure. So, I just sort of became very aware. The way I sort of tell the story is I sort of became very aware that I was very unhappy and that nothing that I was doing to sort of satisfy my unhappiness was working. You know, I became successful at a career. I made a lot of money. I acquired all of the little toys and things that make us feel like we're successful and accomplished in, you know, the Western world. That didn't make me happy, and so I sort of went off to, you know, chase my true passions of art and art history and sculpture and things like this, thinking surely if I follow my heart, my dreams, that'll make me happy. That didn't make me happy. And so I sort of became ultra sensitive to the fact that I couldn't find satisfaction, you know, to really make me happy. And it led me to look internally, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
And it ultimately came to a crossroads of a very authentic prayer, going back to my Catholic faith, you know, talking to Christ very authentically and just saying, hey, you know, what's it really going to take for me to find this grace?
Mm-hmm.
And that week, somebody guided me to a oneness blessing or a Diksha event where I experienced eye Diksha for the first time.
And eye Diksha is the transmission through the eyes. What do? You just stare back or you just look back, right?
You just receive the blessing through the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And that put me into a 3-day state of causeless joy. I thought I had actually been drugged. It was that intense.
Wow.
And so it was just a very, very, very powerful experience for me, because I was coming from a place of, I won't call it depression, but I just was very unhappy, you know, and I was really seeking that. I was seeking relief from it, really.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the vibration of the blessing, you know, where it met me, where I was vibrationally, it just pulled me out of a very dark place very quickly.
Mm.
6 months later, I was in India.
Wow. So what's it like going to India? What happened there?
India, well, it started off with a 21-day silent retreat, and during that time, I had many mystical experiences where Bhagavan would come and answer all of my questions. He showed me my past lives. He took me on journeys through the galaxy.
In person? That was in person, not in vision?
No, they were mystical visions.
Mm, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, not in person.
Okay.
So often people have mystical experiences there. And, you know, when you work with a guru or an avatar, mystical things can happen. And so I've had a ton of them.
So how many years have you been at it?
My first trip to India was, I believe, in the beginning of 06.
Oh, so that's a while. I mean, that's 6 years, huh?
Yeah, not too long.
I'm really good at math, you can tell. So what about your brain? Like, what has happened? So you had mystical experiences. You had 3 days that really kind of knocked you off your...
Well, you know, I like...
out of the depression or out of the sadness or out of the lack of meaning or whatever you would explain it as?
Yep. I had several mystical experiences that really sort of led me up to the decision to go to India, but... one of the things that really sort of triggered the trip, I would say, is that I saw somebody go off to India before I left who I had sort of identified as, you know, I'll just say it. She kind of appeared to sort of be a train wreck.
Okay.
And I said, my gosh, if this woman comes back changed, I'm going. And 21 days later, she came back, and she was a different person. She was floating on air.
Wow.
I just saw that, and I said, I have to have this.
Wow. But so she also did the 21 days of silence?
She did, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and she was part of the blessing community that I was with, and she was just transformed, literally. And I said, I want that transformation. That's what I'm seeking.
Mm.
Surely this is going to bring me happiness. And, of course, it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But what it did do is it started a journey.
Hmm.
You know, a journey inwards that ultimately led to liberation of the mind.
So when you were doing 21 days, I'm just going back to the beginning for a minute, you're doing your 21 days, were they doing idiksha and hands-on and various things, or were you just in silence meditating, pulling in the energies?
You know, they tell you that when you go to those retreats in India, you actually don't have to do anything. You just have to be there for a period of time.
Hmm.
Now, back then, the phenomena, you can sort of look at the phenomena as a bell curve.
Mm-hmm.
As you move forward in time, the bell curve gets higher and higher,
hmm.
and the phenomena is getting stronger and stronger. And so what used to take 21 days, today takes 4 minutes
hmm.
to become a blessing giver, that is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the phenomena has really increased that to that degree, you know, in 6 years, from 21 days to 4 minutes. So you don't actually have to do anything. You have to receive an initiation at the end, which is still how it's done today, to become a blessing giver from a trainer.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, you had to go to India to receive an initiation from one of the monks on the campus.
But nowadays, you can have enough transmission so that you can give a blessing, give the blessings within, 2 days? Wow. So how many times did you go to India?
I've been about 5 times now.
Now, did you not tell me at one point, or somebody told me, that Bhagavan had said that you're awakened?
Yes.
And what does that mean, Michael?
So, in oneness, we've gotten very specific with the phenomena, how it works and how it reacts to the neurology of the physical brain.
Mm-hmm.
A person to have an experience of awakening or to be to be in a permanent state of an awakened state to many different degrees, because there are different degrees of an awakened state.
Oh, good. I didn't know that.
The neurology of the brain has to change.
Mm-hmm.
That meaning the neural pathways have to change. Specific regions of the brain have to be affected. I can't talk specifically about those, but I can tell you that you can feel it when it happens. You can actually feel, I'll just call it a surgery, happening within the brain, you know. And that's why awakening isn't something that you can achieve. It sort of has to be given.
Hmm.
And what happens is the phenomena is what's really sort of doing the giving, if you will.
So it's not simply Bhagavan Ama, it's what, the whole consciousness that comes through and touches people?
I think Bhagavan is initiating the capacity of the phenomena to grow. And I would say that he has his fingers on the volume knob of the intensity of it.
Mm.
What the phenomena really is, I can't explain that.
Mm-hmm.
It can only be experienced.
Well, as your brain was changing, what happened? Did you have reactions? Were you totally ecstatic? Were you fluctuating in moods, or what happens?
Yeah, so let's talk about awakening and what that really is.
Yeah.
Use the term awakening. Others in the past have used the term enlightenment, right, which is sort of a bit of a loaded term, right?
But it's essentially the same thing? Is that what we're saying?
All the same.
Okay.
And there's many facets. I kind of describe enlightenment or awakening as a diamond, right? A beautiful diamond with all of these different facets. So there's many facets to the state.
Okay.
One of the facets is witnessing, right? Where you're actually watching your body that is separate from your consciousness,
okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Body, I like to talk about how my body is constantly going off and doing things because I'm not my body anymore. I'm just witnessing the body going off and doing things.
Mm.
That's just one facet. A way to describe that is the term witnessing. And witnessing is a very beautiful experience because it's difficult to describe, but it's kind of like your vision is actually different. So your vision changes, and your vision is how you perceive yourself in the world. And you're sort of, the vision is sort of set back into the skull a little bit or behind the lens of the eye, and which gives you the perception of this witnessing. And it sort of is a very profound experience that can be accentuated at times when your state increases or decreases. So that's one facet, you know, the facet of the fact that everything is happening automatically. So when the self itself goes away, all things become automatic, and that's a term that's specific to oneness. We say all things are just happening automatically.
What does that mean? Does it mean that our soul is on a journey that is predestined?
You could look at it that way, yeah. We would also say that your life is sort of like a film strip, one experience after another, completely predetermined. So that would sort of lead you down the rabbit hole to believe or to understand that where there's choice, there's suffering, meaning there's actually no freedom of choice.
Hmm.
It's all a paradoxical shift, that there is nobody there at all. There is no person there at all. You know. And so when the person disappears, when the self or the ego goes away, or you come out of it, rather, which is really sort of more of what it really feels like, you're coming out of that suffering, that duality, all things just become automatic immediately.
So meaning what happens to things like accomplishment or success in the world? What happens to that?
You know, well, I can only tell you that where there's choice, there's suffering.
Mm-hmm.
But where you think you're making a choice to do something, it's actually an illusion.
That it's actually coming to you anyway.
It's just happening.
It's just happening.
It's just one more square in the film strip of your whole life. Now, I'll say this. When the self is gone, when the suffering is gone, when the thoughts are gone, when you're in a place where thoughts do not exist, and that is a very real space mm-hmm. that can be given, when you're in that space, there's only clarity to what you really are, which is just personalities and experiences and passion and bliss. And when you have that rigid clarity, that incredible crisp clarity of what you really are, you can become an incredible being very quickly. Because the mind is much like a fog. It's very confusing. It's full of, you know, desires and passion, or desires, passions, thoughts, thinking. It's even hard to distinguish the difference between thoughts and thinking. We're so used to engaging these thoughts all of the time, we think that they're actually ours, and they aren't. Ajahn Chah describes thoughts as being Velcro-y or sticky. Like once you engage them, they become yours. We have different semantics of terminology in oneness, but in oneness we sort of say, just watch the thoughts. Don't engage it. Just watch it. It'll come and it'll go. Some thoughts are more sticky or more Velcro-y or more charged than others, and they take longer to leave your space.
What do you do with the charges?
Just experience them. Charges are just energy, good or bad.
Well, what about karma? Where does that fit in the middle of this? That usually brings a flow of charges, doesn't it?
Karma is an interesting thing, you know, and I think it comes into the mix in many different ways. I think how karma affects us is really probably more what we would talk about, but I think there has to be an undoing to everything that is done, and I think karma, if you will, is the tape recorder recording it all of the doing, all of the things that have to be undone. The process of awakening, however, has a very interesting way of activating our past karma, our collection of our actions, if you will, the suffering and the charges that have been accumulated over a period of time, over lifetimes. And so awakening sort of, it's kind of like having a splinter. I kind of look at karma like splinters, right? And so there's all of this emotional charge around these, all of these emotions around this, these splinters, right? The Diksha comes in and actually agitates the splinter, loosening it, making it loose so that it can come out. Releases the emotion. It releases the splinter. You experience it fully, and it finally goes away permanently.
So to deal with it, you sit with it, right?
Sit with it. You just experience it. So another way to sort of look at karma or charges and sort of how they work together, and how, furthermore, how the ego utilizes them, because what the ego actually does is it sort of identifies itself with all of these hurts and pains, all of these charges accumulated over lifetimes. It identifies itself with all of those things. It fortifies itself with all of those things. So one way to sort of look at this is like a roller coaster ride is one way I describe it. So if you were a child and you had a terrible traumatic experience, and the totality of that one trauma was so much that the ego decided to store three quarters of the roller coaster ride. It only experienced one quarter of it at the moment, you know, that it was happening. But for the rest of your adult life, you've identified with the rest of the three quarters. The Diksha has a way of going in and releasing that splinter, and therefore releasing all of the emotional experiences around the rest of that three quarters of the ride, allowing you to finally experience it all, and then it goes away, and the splinter and all of those charges surrounding it are gone forever. This is what happens when a person actually finally awakens. They can't have splinters anymore. They can't store splinters or those charges any longer. They have to experience it fully at the time when it happens, even if it takes 2 weeks for that charge to pass. And then it's gone, and it's just gone forever. There's no more storage capacity.
So even if that splinter came from many, many lifetimes that led to the trauma in childhood, it'll take care of the entire thing.
Yeah.
And that is that because...
The purging.
Okay, and we don't really know what the because is, but I'm just assuming because the brain changes and the brain is where all this has been stored. Is that right?
Yep. You can put it that way, yeah. I don't know the exact answer, but I would say that the brain, the heart, how the divine is working with you and how you're processing and moving forward in your life, somehow they're all magically working together. But I would imagine a great deal of it has to do with the neurology of the brain and how it's processing these things.
Mm-hmm. So back to, like, working. How do you then go to work? When you're awakened, can you work? And don't you need an ego to work?
I like to describe living in an unawakened world in an awakened state as playing tennis on both sides of the tennis court.
Oh, got to have good Adidas.
Yeah, in an unawakened state, it's like playing tennis on one side, but when you hit the ball into the other side of the court, you're batting it into a fog bank.
So
in an awakened state, you have to live in society where society believes that they actually exist. It's sort of like being a ghost in a ghost town. Maybe that's not a good analogy, but because there's nothing to do because there's no body there inside of you. The body is just walking around doing things. You're just watching the rest of your life happen like a movie.
Well, Michael, is it hard? I mean, you're working, aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
Is it difficult?
No, it's actually very enjoyable.
What about driving a car?
Very easy. I would say, you know, Adyashanti, I like to use him as an example because he sort of has found interesting ways to describe aspects of the state. He describes when a person originally awakens or finally awakens or is, you know, where that transition is happening, that there's this honeymoon effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a nice way to kind of put it. And that honeymoon effect is also an integration period where the person begins to integrate this different way of life because it is very different and it's very profound. Sometimes it's a little scary because it's a new way of living, quite literally. It's a new way of perceiving the world. The senses themselves are permanently heightened. The vision changes multiple times. And that's why the state is so amazing, because you're perceiving the world differently than other people are perceiving the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the colors are more rich and vibrant and crisp. Your sense of hearing is very, very, very acute. Your sense of psychic connection is accentuated.
Hmm.
Your sense of touch is incredibly light and sensitive, you know, and your state will go up and down at times to further deepen and accentuate that state of consciousness, right? And you're just watching it all happen, and there's no more choice anymore. There's nobody there to make any choice. So imagine what it would be like to no longer have to make choice.
Well, it's interesting to me. So if you went to India several times, and were you in the same job all the way through? And if we don't make any more choices, I'm assuming I can get awakened one day. If we don't make any more choices, how do we choose a job? Or you see what I mean?
It just happens.
Aha. And that happened for you?
The body just picks up the phone and applies for a job. The body just writes the resume.
I see.
It's no different than the leaves on the tree deciding to fall. The tree isn't deciding to drop its leaves. They're just falling.
Hmm.
Right? It's in a total illusion that you're actually making a choice. But there's somebody there choosing. Right?
Hmm. Okay, well, let me jump around a little bit. What about emotion?
It's a paradoxical shift.
Yes, I think it is, eh?
Yeah.
Is it wonderful?
It's amazing.
Is it amazing? Do you ever go back into that existential ennui, if that's what it was, or that deep meaninglessness that you had?
No. No, I don't.
So that's wonderful news, actually. Let's talk about emotions a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you said a couple of days ago when I enjoyed hearing you speak that we never really get rid of emotions, and we never stop emotional suffering 100%. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. The way that we've been taught about awakening in India and how we would sort of describe that, what you just described, is that everybody has what's called a constant. And this constant is comprised of existential suffering or duality, psychological suffering, and physical suffering. And then because we're human beings, we have emotions. So there's emotional suffering. So the constant, the quota, if you will, for each person is set by the divine or God or cosmic consciousness, right? And it kind of has a lot to do with what you're here to learn, what you're here to experience, all these. I'm sure there's a multitude of factors that go into figuring that out. I can't describe that. Mm-hmm. But the only thing that we can have an effect on is our psychological suffering. That's the only thing that we can possibly affect. Hmm. The only way to affect it is to wiggle loose those splinters, right? By purging the suffering that's buried deep inside of us, all of these hurts and pains. After you start experiencing these hurts and pains that are being stored, because the ego is like a battery, it just stores these hurts and pains so that it can define itself in the world of who it is, right? Mm-hmm. After they start to be experienced, you start to feel lighter. After you have a good cry, don't you feel really good?
Yeah, you do, actually.
You feel really light. It's because you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be experiencing these hurts and pains.
Hmm.
You're not supposed to be holding them or storing them.
Or identifying yourself with them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The Diksha will wiggle that splinter loose. You experience it, and then you reduce your physical suffering. When you reduce your physical suffering, the appearance of your physical body, I'm sorry, when you reduce your psychological suffering, the experience of your physical body improves, right?
So it's a way to deal with health, of course, I guess, eh?
Can be. Over a period of time, it has a cumulative effect. Ultimately, you'll come to a point where it's very difficult to stay angry anymore.
Hmm.
Now, this only works with the phenomena, right? This is kind of designed to work in conjunction with giving and receiving the Diksha.
Hmm.
Okay? So it has a cumulative effect on the neurology by reducing the psychological suffering. Now, because you're a human being, there'll always be emotional suffering, but it's very difficult to understand the differences between those if you're really deep within the mind and you're experiencing a lot of psychological suffering or thoughts. If your mm-hmm. mind is really active, it can be hard to make a distinction between what emotional suffering is, what's the difference between thoughts and thinking, psychological suffering, how you're experiencing your physical body, and ultimately what your constant really, really is.
Do you have to really study all of that in order to become awakened, or do you just...
It just happens automatically.
Well, we like that the best, don't we?
It's kind of the silver bullet, if there was such a thing.
If there was such a thing. Well, so what do you do with emotional suffering? Oh, I guess when you accept it as a constant, right?
Emotional suffering is separate from the constant, really. It's just part of being human.
Mm.
You're always going to suffer emotion. I think I heard one time that we have 20-some-odd emotions and all of the combinations of those, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just part of being human is that you're going to experience emotions, right? They'll always be with you, whether you're awakened or not.
It's interesting to me, working with a lot of people, it's quite, a lot of us know a bit about, or a fair amount about, the relationship between physical suffering and emotional storage, or even maybe karmic storage. But, you know, have you seen a lot of healings that are physical?
I've heard of many. I haven't witnessed many through Diksha. Actually, that's not true. I have witnessed several, in fact. Several of them had to do with psychological disorders like bipolar, schizophrenic, things like that. I also witnessed a friend of mine. She fell down a flight of stairs. She broke her arm quite bad. She had a spiral fracture, in fact.
Oh, my.
And she healed herself in 4 days, and she had the x-rays to prove it.
And how did she do it? Through a series of dikshas?
Yeah, through giving herself the blessing, giving herself diksha.
So a person can give it to themselves?
Yes.
Once you're initiated, sort of thing.
Send it long distance. You can send it over the phone. You can look into the photo of a friend and send it to him that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. So what's the goal here?
Well, there's a train passing here, so it might get a little loud.
That must be a good metaphor for what we're talking about.
The goal is to awaken. The goal is to come out of the conflicted mind, right? Because I think it's really helpful to look at the mind as a fog. At the core of that fog is perfect fear.
Okay.
The mind, there's nothing wrong with the mind. We actually say don't make an enemy of the mind, because the mind is created by God.
Mm-hmm.
It's there for a purpose. Everything has a purpose.
But if you made an enemy of it, that's back to resistance, isn't it? There's a lot of resistance problems.
Could be, yeah. There's no reason to make an enemy of the mind.
Okay.
What's best to do, what we suggest, is to have a very strong passion to come out of the mind. Because the mind is sort of like a preschool. It's learning how to grow through suffering.
Mm-hmm.
But suffering doesn't have to be there to experience growth. There's other ways to grow.
And with Bhagavan Ama, have they not a goal to, kind of like the Maharishi, to send enlightenment around the world in order to infuse the collective, in order to wake the collective up?
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And they have very specific numbers based on the populations of every single country, world.
Have you seen any work done with children, or, is that a good place to go to help people wake up young?
I have, and in fact, the Oneness Movement is very focused on the youth of the planet. In terms of somehow the phenomena has an ability to have an effect on children in a unique way, and I can't really fully describe it, but I have seen children as young as 4 years old be blessing givers. I've actually initiated children who are 5.
Wow.
These are very powerful.
And they can turn and then do it to one another.
Absolutely, yeah. And it works. It's amazing.
So do these have to be children that are in a very protective, conscious environment, or that can they be children who've had trauma and, you know what I'm saying? Does it have to be someone who's already primed for it? It
could be both. Yeah,
and you've seen both?
I have, yes.
And what happened with the bipolar? You mentioned bipolar and schizophrenic. And what happened? Did they actually receive a healing? Were they able to release those splinters?
The one individual described his, I'll just call it an ailment or psychological ailment. He sort of described it as hearing a lot of voices in the past. And he said that the voices were gone. There was less anger, there was less turmoil, the depression had left him completely, and his doctor cleared him to come off of his medications that he'd been on for a long, long, long time, many, many, many years.
And was that the schizophrenic fellow?
No, he was bipolar, this individual.
Hmm.
But I think, that disorder sort of encompasses an awful lot of sort of unknowns, I think, in medicine today. I don't know much about it, but I hear that label sort of gets used a lot for many psychological issues.
For inexplicable. It's interesting to me also that the frequencies are moving up in the universe and on the planet. At least that's what we're hearing, and that's how it feels. Does Bhagavan ever talk about that? Is that why we have so many mental health afflictions? Or do you have any ideas about that?
I can't speak to that, but he does say that the golden age, if you'd like to call it that, is happening because of what's actually happening in our galaxy, that our solar system is coming into alignment with what he describes as the center of the universe, right? And there's a specific type of gamma radiation or God consciousness that is being projected from that center, and that is really what's making it possible for common man to awaken today.
Hmm.
very interesting, and that is happening on a cyclical event over the period of approximately every, I think it's 32,000 years or something like that.
Hmm.
You know, mankind comes in and goes out of the Golden Age.
Hmm.
But when it comes back into the Golden Age, it happens very fast. And then very slowly you come out of it.
Well, I'd like to whip right into it if I could.
Yeah.
The Golden Age. So tell us about the Oneness University itself. Do a lot of people go? And is it like growing? You told me that told us all in the last 6 years that it's been an amping up of the power of it all, right?
Yeah.
So what's happening there?
It's interesting. I mean, when I went, I think one of the first times I went, I had about 80 people in my first course.
Mm-hmm.
The next time I went, I want to say there was about 180 people. And I hear today it's completely booked almost every single month from people all over the world.
Wow.
Really China, which is really interesting. A dear friend of mine is actually a trainer in China. She's actually in a similar state as mine. She was also confirmed by Bhagavan to be in a fully awakened state without self. And she has been telling me that the Chinese just love it because it makes them happy. And that the Chinese government is even aware of what's going on. And they sent a representative over to India, in fact, to look at it and to see if it was sort of in alignment with their government's views. Because obviously religion is a big deal over there, and for several generations they've lived without religion. And Bhagavan has said, you know, I don't plan on confronting your government at all. I actually just want to make your people happy. And they said, that's great, because that's what we want to. Mm-hmm. And she said, in fact, that's what's happening. People are just having a hard time staying angry, you know, and that's the side effect of, or a byproduct of the awakened state. It's very hard to hold on to things any longer.
Hmm. You know, so it's really interesting. So if you think about going back, a lot of us think that China has a repressive society, right?
Yes.
So we spoke at the very beginning about this is a route to freedom. So I'm just concluding that they must be in themselves feeling a really deep freedom, you think?
I think everybody in the world is expressing or is experiencing something, and I think it's hard to describe if you don't have any foundation, you know, in the past to kind of judge it with or to kind of sort of categorize it with. I consider myself very fortunate to have spent the time that I spent over there that I can find a way to sort of describe what's happening internally for me and to help other people understand what's happening to them, because it is has a cumulative effect on the body, on your life, and on your neurology.
And there's no way to say how many dikshas it takes. Some people are immediately awakened, is that right?
That reminds me of what's that lollipop ad? How many licks does it take? Addictions does it take?
Yeah.
Well, everybody's neurology is different, and it really comes down to the neurology. And I think the interest somebody has on looking internally at what's really going on. And that's kind of what Bhagavan says over and over and over. If you could just stop and look at what's happening on the inside. You know, but the mind chooses where to look and where not to look. And that's probably one of the first things you should look and see, is that the mind is choosing.
So it's about a beingness. It's sort of not passive, but it's a consciousness, eh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when the consciousness is actually making the choice to look inwards with the intent to experience growth, something very special can happen.
Mm. Now, also some people, when you're at a group where Diksha is being passed, there are some people making quite a lot of noise. Can you talk about that? It's kind of unnerving unless you've been prepared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that. Mm-hmm. People have very deep emotional experiences when they're experiencing the vibration of the Diksha. It can bring up a lot of emotions. It can bring up some of those charges we talked about. People could be screaming.
Wow.
Could be passing out. People could be experiencing nothing or just be in a state of bliss, experiencing causeless joy, the gamut. Now, that doesn't always happen, but on occasion it can happen. And so I actually tell people, give yourself permission to have an experience. Give yourself permission. How often do you actually do that, you know, in your life? Do you cut out a block of time to have a visceral experience?
I haven't had any of that except once, but it was interesting to me because I began to judge the fact that I was sitting there like a well-behaved character. And some people were really obviously in either ecstasy or in just a complete release through tears and so on. And the first time I heard the Liberation Sutra play, and it was in a wonderful, wonderful acoustics hall, I couldn't hold my body still. It just started to go through all kinds of actions. And that's the first time I kind of understood it.
Yeah.
It had its own wisdom, didn't it?
It's a cumulative effect.
Mm-hmm.
The body, because the body actually is the one wanting. The body really desires this high vibration of energy. So does the neurology. It just loves it because the neurology is becoming much more aware, more razor sharp and clear.
And again, back to freedom. It's freedom, isn't it, when you can actually move whatever's there.
Yeah. So let's turn the interview around on you for a second.
All right.
You've had eye diksha.
Yes, I have.
And what was your experience?
It was amazing, actually. It was vibrationally very, very strong, actually. I can't put it in words, really. It just vibrated through me, and it was quite surprising because the last time we experienced it was last weekend with Michael Milner.
Right.
And I didn't have my glasses on, and he was a little distance from us, and we couldn't really see into his eyes and see the pupil of his eyes. But boy, I really went a long way out of myself.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And it was very marvelous. You get out of yourself, don't you?
Get quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very, and it was a very rich, voluminous quiet, if you know what I mean. Very,
yes.
Expanded.
That can be a permanent experience.
Oh, well, that's great.
Imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
So now what you just described with Michael Milner is sort of the 2.0 of oneness, because there's something very new that's happening in the world today. There's something called the oneness meditation, and this is kind of the 2.0 of receiving the Diksha through the eyes. And right now there's only 4 people in North America that have been initiated to transfer the energy in this way.
Mm.
And it's about, I mean, I would have to say it's about 20 times stronger than regular eye diksha, maybe 100 times stronger. I sat through 5 sessions last week, and
wow,
it was amazing.
Are you also one of the 4?
No, I'm not. I hope to be one day.
But I heard that you also do that. You're able to do that, and you do teach people to do that. Is that right?
Yeah, and they're very different things. Eye diksha and the oneness meditation are not the same.
Oh, so what is the difference? You sort of said it, but can you reiterate that for this neophyte here?
Yeah. Phenomena is a mysterious thing, right? It can permeate through the palm chakras. It can permeate through intention, meaning you can give it through hands-on or through intention long distance. You can also transfer it from the eyes. Right. Now, only somebody who's initiated to give diksha can do this. It doesn't really work otherwise because there's, I won't get into why, but the difference is with the oneness meditation, these 4 people in North America who can do this now, it doesn't mean that they're awakened. One of them actually is. I don't know about the other 3, but there's a presence. I can only describe it as a presence that comes into the room, that comes into their body, and that flows out of their eyes at a pace that is staggering.
Hmm.
that could literally put people into a completely silent experience, as you described, 100 to 300 to 400 people at a time in the period of how many minutes was it? 10?
15? Mm-hmm. 10, I think, yeah.
That's amazing, and that's really what I've been waiting for.
That's just going to be wonderful, isn't it, for you?
Imagine 50,000 people in our country offering this today.
Wouldn't that be just something?
Mm-hmm.
It's like take it and pass it on. It's just really a wonderful thing. I wanted to say this too, and the Diksha, for those people listening who haven't experienced it, it's about these beings putting their hands on your head, if they're not using iDiksha,
mm-hmm.
putting hands on the head and feeling that energy. And twice now, I've had the experience, this is phenomena, I think. Twice now, I've had the experience of not being aware at all when the person took their hand off my head. I sat there absolutely thinking it was a very long hand presence.
Isn't that interesting?
It was absolutely, well, I think that might be wonderful, don't you?
You could say that there's a presence that's still there.
Yeah, and I went, wow, that person's gone. And both times I thought it was a long, long, long Diksha.
Yeah.
And another time I felt like my head was gone. I had no skull.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. Actually, that's a beautiful experience. It feels like your brain is just kind of lingering out there in the breeze.
I really liked it. It was so, and the colors were just stunning. It was beautiful. And so I'd like some more of that. Can you set that up for us?
I'll send that to you tonight.
Can you do it? I'm feeling a tremendous, wonderful energy as we're talking. And I know it's like a Diksha. Is that, could you call it that you're sending a Diksha through as we talk for listeners and all?
Often when you stand next to somebody who's in an awakened state, you can feel the presence. You can feel the presence of, I call it Diksha. Ajahshanti may call it something else. Eckhart Tolle may call it something else. You know, we all have different terminology. I just call it the presence. You can feel the presence, and it comes through over the phone. You know, I have a friend who's in a very beautiful state in Taiwan. She called me from Taiwan, and I could feel it coming through the phone. It was so powerful, I had to hang up the phone and go lay down.
Isn't that wonderful?
It's just how it travels. It's miraculous. It's phenomena, you know.
But I notice as we keep talking, and you're telling us more and more of these levels, that the energy is getting bigger.
Yep.
Can you tell that? Do you love that?
Yeah, that's just how it works. It's a beautiful thing.
It changes the nature of ambition for sure, doesn't it?
Yes.
So what's up with you? What are you going to do with it now? Are you just going to keep chopping wood and carrying water?
Well, I mean, I'm, you know, I have a pretty extensive corporate background as an art director, creative director, and now I'm an investor in an energy company, and it has a really beautiful possibility of providing sustainable green energy to the planet, to people, and also cleaning up Superfund sites.
Wow, that's wonderful. Do you think if we Diksha enough people, then we could just all create our own energy and run whatever vehicle we wanted?
Maybe.
So that's wonderful. So how, it's not hard. Okay, now I'm going to reiterate what I think you said, which is to do that wonderful sounding corporate, you don't, it just comes through you. You don't need to be doing. Is that right?
I can't even begin to tell you how miraculous it is to watch your body do and say things it has never done or said with no education. It just happens.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Wow.
There's no suffering when there's no thought happening. There's only clarity, and when that clarity is there, your body is just channeling action. I'll put it this way. Actually, here's a really good example. A good friend of mine, his name is Peter. He lives down in the Bay Area. He's an attorney, a tax attorney. He's a partner at a very big law firm. He's in a similar state as mine. He describes the state, you know, and how it affects him like this. He says, because I'm no longer suffering from the mind, there's this intense clarity And because this clarity is there, I'm no longer in worry, doubt, or fear that I've done the wrong thing for my client. I just know I made the right choice, and I can do the chore in half of the amount of time and charge them half as much money. Hmm. Client is happy, and they come back with more work, and we're more profitable, and I get twice as much done in half the amount of time.
Wow, is that ever wonderful. So we want people like that to be running for government, huh?
Exactly.
You need to Diksha the Congress.
That's right. We really.
Yeah, oh, this is really exciting. It's I was just thinking, what about education and so on? This thing, this can really apply to all kinds of things. Bhagwan and Amma started a school years ago, did they not?
They did, for children. Uh-huh.
Is it still going on?
No, it's not. That when that ended, they started the Oneness University, and they realized that their true vision needed to spread to the entire world. Yeah.
I should think that it would be wonderful to apply this to some schools, though, wouldn't you?
You know, it's funny because their school, if you, it was called Jivashram, mm-hmm. and the children, the purpose of the school was actually to awaken these children.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. And even though the parents really wanted their children all to become doctors and engineers, the children learned how to do astral travel. You know, on top of mathematics and science and all of the other practices that school had. It was a live-at school, you know, so the children would go and they'd stay there. So there was a cafeteria and things like this. But the children awoke. Some of the children were talking to stars.
Hmm.
Children were talking to ascended masters. Some of them were talking to the fruit trees, and the tree would tell them when the fruit was going to be perfectly ripe and ready to eat.
Oh, wonderful.
Kind of go on and on and on. But basically, Bhagavan realized that he sort of had to dial it back a little bit because that consciousness was spreading to the family members.
Hmm.
So it was starting to kind of leak out of this protective boundary of the school, if you will.
Hmm.
So he sort of dialed it back for some time until they started the Oneness University, began offering courses, and then foreigners started coming, and that's really kind of how it spread.
That's wonderful. I want to end this with a kind of a capricious question, I suppose. If the consciousness is coming from, or if the center is galactic, right? Isn't that what you were talking about?
Yeah.
Are the consciousness of ETs anywhere in the mix?
You know, I can only imagine that if the consciousness of the divine is hitting us right now, it's hitting almost everything in its path. And I think that would include other planets with other beings as well. Is Bhagavan assisted by, you know, other beings? Maybe. I don't know.
We just don't know that.
Don't know, but it seems like an awfully big puzzle for one man to put together.
I should think he counts on it coming through him and he doesn't have to look for it, right? And the oneness is really that we're all kind of no self, but we're one consciousness. Is that right?
Yeah, and you could kind of call that the I.
That's wonderful. Well, Michael, we have to end this, but I've so enjoyed this, and we've just kind of scratched the surface, or the no surface, or whatever we want to call it. Can you tell people how to get hold of you if they want to, if they'd like to?
I'm in Seattle now, and we're running a multitude of courses in Seattle. You could go to seattleoneness.com, and you could come and visit us in Seattle and do Diksha Wednesday nights. So I think we have Diksha almost every other day now.
Oh, that's wonderful. You're getting a lot of people coming?
Yeah, we are.
Well, I've really enjoyed our time together, and I thank you so much for spending the time with us today.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
All right, and I'd just like to say to everyone at home, thank you so much for listening. If you would like to be in touch, if you'd like more information, make some feedback, it's veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. And we should all breathe in the energy that Michael's helped us feel tonight. Breathe in the energy and breathe out blessings to one another. Good night.
Good night.